Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
It's the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host today, Joe Tumalo, and my guest today is a gentleman that lives very, very far away from us here on the East Coast, and someone that I really had the pleasure and honor to meet at the NCGP conference in Las Vegas in 2018. And he was definitely in my top three favorite and most valuable speakers that I saw at the conference, someone that I really walked away with some real tangible, great ideas. Please welcome Lonnie Starkey. Welcome, Lonnie.
Hello, good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
So you travel the country, right? You're speaking all over.
I do about one or two per month on average throughout the year. So I end up with about 20 speaking gigs or so throughout the year of all different formats, small group board presentations, which I just did in San Francisco. Earlier this week, actually for 4 hours, did a board presentation at a board retreat. And then I would do conferences, breakouts, and keynotes, and then different kinds of regional types of trainings and sessions for either private clients or public association type of things, like gift planners, major gift officers, and professional advisor trainings.
Great. And you have that wonderful combination that you don't see very often of highly educated. You're a tax attorney, former CPA. You're teaching at a college in Hawaii now, and you have a lot of fundraising experience, and you're a great presenter, and you have the personal side, not only the smarts, the what I call the below the line skill sets, but the above the line, being able to connect with easily and being able to motivate, inspire people. So yeah, thanks again for sharing your gifts today and to the industry.
Oh, thank you for the very generous compliment.
Well, you told me to. Remember, we rehearsed that.
Before we started. Yes, I'm sending you the $2 right now.
So I asked you what you wanted to talk about today, and it's a topic that is discussed a lot. I guess it depends on the size of the organization. Most of our consulting work, we're generally, for the most part, dealing with mid-level charities. And it's talked about, but I just don't see a lot of action happening around it. And it's the role of professional advisors in philanthropy and our donor work. Right. Mm-hmm. And the continual questions, and you had mentioned there was an email thread on the NCGP site recently about what are some good strategies, how much time should we be spending. Certainly, I think if you agree that it depends on the type of organization.
You know, I would say that's always a good question as far as the sector you're in and things like that. But the things I usually start to break it down by first is where your organization is, sort of where its footprint is. You know, are you national? Are you regional? Are you local? And then where are your donors coming from, and whether or not you can affect the advisor impact on that group. So if your donors are national, obviously you're going to have a very different advisor strategy than if your donors are regional and if they're local. So that's the way I look at it more. Whether you're a human services organization, higher ed, arts, healthcare, that, at least at that, if you kind of think of it as the priorities of what I go through, that's kind of further down and does become relevant, but I think less so than those first questions I have.
Well, let's say we're a private school and mm-hmm. our grads are all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the likelihood that anyone that's not a graduate, especially out of state, is going to want to talk to us about making us part of their family?
Yeah. Are you referring to the donor or the advisor, that question, just to clarify?
The advisor.
Yeah. So that's a great example of probably a lower amount of time investment. Even though obviously your school is in a certain city, so that you got that footprint. But if you know that 80% or greater of your alumni go out of state in particular, then spending time out of state for advisors, I would say, would not be a great use of your resources for the out-of-state group. However, once you start in-state and then definitely in your city and within maybe the a regional area of your city where you might have 20% of your alumni, usually it's possible they don't go that far away, then it starts to be absolutely worth a sliding scale of spending some time in that area. And now this is the part that really intrigued me about that email thread is there is investing in advisors that is totally self-serving. You know, you're looking for ROI for what, you know, you put out and is it going to help your specific organization's bottom line. The second part of that, which is especially when these national charities or large enough charities that choose to invest in, or let's say the local community foundations or other organizations that invest in professional advisor training specifically as it relates to charitable planning, they absolutely are helping the rest of the industry big time. And that's something I think they don't get enough credit for and appreciation, because when that larger regional university or that larger, you know, national charity starts doing advisor work either across the country or in your big city or in your multi-region, they are helping train advisors on a mass scale that is absolutely going to impact every other charity that's having their donors on a much lower volume basis meet those hopefully educated and motivated advisors. So there's kind of two things going on with that. But specifically back to your point, I still, if you see a certain, what we tend to find, or I tend to find, is your graduates might in some larger percentages gravitate to certain big cities that you would say, hey, you actually go in, you know, that staff actually goes to Chicago once a year to have an alumni event because they know they've got a pool of, you know, 82 donors in the area. Or, you know, in your exact state where the location is, maybe within 1 hour's driving, you know you have a certain amount of numbers there. So in those areas, you could still do lower cost and advisor type training. Again, on the belief too, which I really believe, especially for gift planning type of focus, which is you will be attempting to help your bottom line and you're helping other nonprofits, and other nonprofits, if they would do the same, they would be attempting to help their bottom line and also indirectly helping you. And that's the part that the all boats go up in a rising tide. That is something I think doesn't get mentioned that often when we think of the advisor community as a whole.
Well said. So when we're talking about professional advisors, we're really talking about, tell me if mm-hmm. I'm on your thought pattern here, process. We have, like you said, kind of self-promoting. Hey, let's educate professional advisors in our area so that they will maybe mention us to their donor, to their clients. If they ask, hey, you know, I never went to college, but I really care about children and healthcare for children, who do you recommend? And then the other side, of course, which is a lot of talk about, and U.S. Trust, Bank of America have done studies on high net worth donors, and the other side being working with professional advisors through our donors, right? So there's mm-hmm. what we've just been talking about is spending time with professional advisors, educating them, networking, hoping mm-hmm. that they'll think of us when a donor asks for places to support. And then the other side, how do we work with our donors through our donor channel with professional advisors, and how would we get involved and when would we get involved with the advisor?
Yeah, so there's two points there that you raised. The first one, real briefly, I generally, while it does happen and it's wonderful anecdotes when it does, and the anecdotes do tend to spread like fire because they're great stories, I don't expect or rely on the hope too much that advisors will bring us up sort of because we're top of mind, especially, now this really becomes down to sector, especially if we don't have that name or brand recognition just because, you know, we have such a large footprint as a nonprofit over a certain industry. So I generally don't say one of our primary goals of networking with advisors and doing self-promotion and continuing education for advisors is that a person walks in without a connection to us, and then the connection will be established by the advisor. That happens probably at a low percentage. It can be really nice when it happens, but I generally don't count that as one of the strong, highly likely takeaways that could happen from our investment with advisors. So for example, when I do hear it happen, it might be something to the effect of, oh, Jim and Susan, you know, you have no children, you know, you need to do your estate plan. Have you thought about where it's going to go? Oh, no, we really haven't. Well, tell me about some of your interests. Well, you know, we volunteer here at X, and we kind of, you know, we lost our parents to cancer. Oh, well, you know, the American Cancer Society, you know, might be a way to remember your parents. So in that way, it's like a really broad entry point. But generally, again, it will happen in limited cases. But the idea sometimes is, oh, I'm on a board of our local, insert specific smaller charity that advisor has a really strong relationship with. I happen to be on the board of this. Do you know anything about them? No, we don't. I mean, we've heard about them a little bit. Oh, you should consider them. Let me connect you with their, you know, their vice president advancement, and we'll get you a tour. And so that's how I think some people hope that it would happen. But generally, for different reasons, I don't see that play out as much. And I wouldn't want to promise that as a likely return. And while I do think there's other more likely things that are going to happen, that one, I would say, is not part of the strategy. And if it happens to happen from time to time, great.
Yeah.
So I had one here in Hawaii, one charity I thought did a great job. What they did is they mailed every advisor, or whatever their mailing list was, but it was obviously pretty large because I know a whole host of different people got it, and I got it as an advisor in our state also, quote unquote advisor, not practicing, but just from like a designation and what clubs I belong to. And it was, this is who we are. This is what we're doing. We know you're going to get clients. They're going to come in and want to support us. Here is, on a USB flash, our bequest language, our variety of things. Here's how you do it. And it was really nice. It was really simple. It was really cheap. It's kind of going to go in a file or in a box somewhere. And it was a nice professional touch. But what I took away, it wasn't the in mention our charity when they have no interest, but it's, if you come across our donors from time to time, we want you to have a ready-made thing in your box. It didn't cost us much, or it didn't cost the charity much to do, but they put a huge footprint out there in one swoop.
Interesting. And this is a national brand?
It was a chapter of a national brand, but it's very strong in the state of Hawaii. So that's where that regional footprint was worth it for them to do that.
Yeah.
And I would, I'm not sure what the, I probably could figure out approximately how much they spent, but to me, and remember, it's a one-off. I don't think they did it again. Even if they considered, maybe they would do it again in 3 to 5 years. It was, I thought, a really good, when you think of newsletters and postcards and the different ways you can advertise the charity, I thought that was a great segmented, targeted group. They probably did it to between 500 to 1,500 names is my guess. And knowing how much those kinds of things cost, thought it was a really, really nice one-off effort, or in not frequently done effort.
Interesting.
Yeah, but back to your second point. So that was a kind of a long way for me to say, you know, it's okay.
But good ideas in there.
Yeah, but yeah. So the more valued one to me is when you think of every community in our state, every community across the nationwide has lawyers that and accountants and financial advisors all in them, all with differing levels of experience with charitable planning, all different receptivities to charitable planning, positive, negative, neutral. That is the challenge for the entire philanthropic community. And to, I'm going to, you know, make a little, do it for the team kind of thing. So when a huge chunk of charities say, you know, it's not valuable to us, I can't show an ROI specifically to our charity, so I'm not going to really put time into this, you are now, one, not helping the nonprofit community as it relates to outreach to advisors. So that's number one. And then number two, you are absolutely putting it on those that have chosen to do it. And you are absolutely, in my opinion, I don't care how small you are benefiting because someone else is doing it on your behalf. Because every time I train up an advisor, specific for my selfish reasons initially, they are meeting with all their clients who have their, those clients have their own charitable interests, and they are so much more receptive, so much more comfortable, so much more experienced to advance those philanthropic discussions because of mine and whoever else is investing in those in relationships that, and I know this for a fact because I've seen the estate plans they get created where I'm, my charity or my client is one of the beneficiaries or was not even a beneficiary because I also helped advisors that are not supporting a specific charity or client that I'm working for. And I can get expand on that in a minute if you'd like. But that is hugely impactful for other charities. And so with that reason, I do think it's important that charities that aren't investing understand they're benefiting and do their part, even if it's a smaller part, even if it's a smaller percentage, even if it's less frequent, because it is good for all charities when it professional advisors understand the benefit for their clients, understand that this is a positive thing, and don't have negative biases towards establishing and supporting large outright gifts and, of course, all sorts of charitable estate gifts.
Lonnie, that's a great perspective, and candidly, I never looked at it that way. So you could, just brainstorming, thinking out loud, you could, if we're a hospital and we're going to do a professional advisor's seminar, why not call the local independent school and maybe partner and do it together?
Absolutely. And then, you know, and then there's different ways. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's so many wonderful ways to include it both directions. I'm doing a training in a few months for a Big Ten school, and, you know, they're picking up the bill. They're, you know, we have a 2 days of training, and they, I have to commend them for one of the things. They're inviting other smaller charities that would never put this together, never, you know, establish something like this, not pay a lot of money to have someone come in from out of state to do things. And they're opening the doors to one of the particular topics. And I think that's really, really positive from the larger charity that has, you know, the finances to do that. But they're, that charity is also doing a huge outreach to professional advisors, and they'll be a big component to the training together. And that is, of course, first going to hopefully help the school. You know, that's the clear line. But I guarantee, you know, when they have whatever 40 to 80 professional advisors from that region come to this, those people are going to go back out, do some things for the university, and then of course going to apply what they learn to any client and any charity opportunity that comes up, because that's just how that works.
It's a great idea. Really smart.
So yeah, so as someone who invested a lot of time proudly and first of all self-serving, but knowing the secondary benefit, I really, really encourage charities that have smaller budgets or don't have the direct ROI to it to still be extremely positive. You know, if they hear of that charity doing the training, to reach out to their own advisor list, even if it may be small, and do something, maybe do a small contribution to help it, to encourage it, to make it happen again the next year if that charity is not going to do it. I just think we're a community when it comes to that. And it's something that you should not, as especially if you're doing gift planning and major gift fundraising, so you're already in that space. So I like it when I see your vote vote of confidence, you mean believing it's a good thing to be happening, your vote of those charities that are going to do it on a larger scale, and then how you can be a part of the process, however small that might be.
Wonderful. And how do you, I mean, I have some ideas, but I want to hear yours. How do you measure the ROI or the, yeah, the ROI? Is it worth, mm-hmm. I go to my clients and they mm-hmm. are so hardworking and they're working really long hours and everybody says they're doing too much. They're too busy. They can't mm-hmm. get homework done. So obviously this is extra work. It's not direct donor work, which we want to prioritize, but how do we measure ROI on the time and effort we spend on these?
Sure.
Initiatives?
So there's, again, the answer to that will depend a lot on what you choose your strategy to be. So for example, let's take the two scenarios, which are kind of good examples, which is one, the example where the ROI is really clear and you know that your investment has more likely a measurable outcome. So we'll go with the more natural one, which is, I think when I invest in advisors, they directly give me leads or close gifts that benefit the charity or client I'm working with. So that's the most self-driven one. So in my experience, both doing it directly as a gift planner myself for over a decade, I worked for a large state university in a single state, a huge portion of the alumni live in the state. And then for the ones that move away, they tend to pocket around certain big cities where the size of their presence there makes it valuable from a time standpoint. But definitely for strong regional, strong town, and strong state organizations, I would get between 20% and 33% of every year's gifts directly from advisor leads or advisor-driven gifts where I didn't have the lead prior to that.
Really?
Yes, massive. Now, that is very unique because what I described, which is we have, you know, so many alum in a state, and in that state, there's only so many advisors to go around. Even though the population is over 1 million people, which is a, you know, pretty good number, the advisor community that's doing most of the wealth planning work is probably under 300. And I'm grabbing a lot of people that are not the, you know, the most, you know, top people. And if you go to the top people, you're now looking at less than 100 people. And if you look at just firms, you're looking at probably less than 50 when you count, you know, key accounting firms, key law firms, key financial service firms, key banks. Now that's a really manageable number in a population that's, let's say, 1.2 million people. So it's not that I'm chasing down 2,000 advisors. I, of course, prioritize them. The mailing list I used was anywhere from 800 to 1200. So that's the entire universe for the whole state. And obviously, you know, California is going to be much larger, but other places that are either strong regional centers or smaller state populations, that you could totally pick the 2 to 4 biggest cities in your state that's going to have your potential donors in that area. And you now have a very manageable list to do things such as simple as marketing, you know, email marketing, direct mail marketing, even before you start putting human power into going and visiting and things like that. So I, in the sector of groups that has that right profile, it was a huge use of an easy ROI for my time. There were more staff people in my office, so they even had spent a lot of their time with advisors, and it was always paying dividends. Because the way I would always describe it is, hey, for every single donor you have, of course we know donors will be repeat donors and we love that, but every single donor you have, you got to go find another single donor, do the cultivation, you know, have them give and hopefully they'll repeat give, and then go find another single donor. You do it right with an advisor, they're doing 100 to 300 of their clients, and that's rotating all the time. So you invest in one advisor for the next 30 years, you've got a mouthpiece that's supportive that's going to be talking to first, you know, whatever number of donors that could be donors to you are, but then all their clients that could be donors to other organizations. So they are like, you know, multi-level marketing standpoint, I joke about it, they are out doing business for you once they understand your business. And that's why it's not like a donor. You got to go see often, and maybe, you know, maybe they make four gifts their whole life to you, you know, like two CGAs, one bequest, and then, you know, do something else. So that, and that's worth it, by the way. But you go down the advisor route, and they have access to people, and they're seeing people all the time, especially financial advisors and CPAs, who are even more highly high transaction oriented than attorneys. Attorneys might see their client, you know, once every 5 years, once every 3 years, once every 12 years. So they are really important because they have a huge client list, but they don't have a high volume of transactions with the same clients, and, you know, except when they're working on the next thing. But you get down to the CPAs, the maybe the financial planners, people that might annually see their client or things like that because of just the way their reviews work. Wonderful, wonderful investment for different reasons with those groups.
Hmm. Yeah, I just want to add that don't let the work with professional advisors keep you from actually spending time with donors. I know that sounds obvious, but I have seen people spend a lot of time with professional advisors, more time than with donors. And tell me if you disagree, and I'm not devaluing mm-hmm. all the great stuff you just said. Professional advisors can't say no, right? So they're, and instead of facing the rejection of approaching a donor, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to go see professional advisors.
So, yeah, so there's definitely truth in that. I would say I agree with it to this extent. There's definitely, you know, an art to our work, and we're making those judgment calls every day we wake up and decide how to schedule that week. I know that it is, I would say, a much bigger problem, and we don't talk too much about this in general, doesn't make for a whole presentation usually, but much bigger problem of people over-stewarding their donors with their time. Mm. That, to me, you brought up a really good point, which is, hey, make sure you're making the most of your time. Absolutely. But you, if you're going to really do like a scale concern, to me, a big scale concern is major gift officers and gift planners who, because stewardship is a really positive, you know, thing to do. Yeah. And there's really no, it's hard to measure the detriment of over-stewarding someone. So it's always a safe place to go with your time. And I know I've spent a lot of time both when I was part of management on the fundraising side and now in my consulting capacity is measuring, you know, a good stewardship amount of time on someone and when it maybe is those safe visits. When you're going to see someone you know because you know them really well now and, you know, you've done a lot of things with them over the years and maybe you're not doing as much prospecting and meeting new faces and doing those tougher get in the door, you know, expanding your portfolio type of efforts because it's so easy to go visit with your legacy society who like you and know you and, you know, you have, I mean, I would see some people with, you know, 4 to 6 visits a year with the same person, but there's no strategy of what the next, you know, ask is going to be. So I think your broader point is very, very true. Don't go visit with advisors because it's easier to do that or, you know, it feels positive. You get to click a visit. But on the same notion, there's those other things that we're doing too, which then becomes a really delicate balance on the high wire, which is how much is valuable from a that sort of magic of networking and seeing people just because you never know what happens when you get eyeball to eyeball with people and how much has to be really clear strategy of, hey, I need to spend maybe 80% of my time on building new relationships and 20% of my time on seeing friendly old faces and being thankful to our donors and all that. And by the way, that's I've not found any perfect solution to that. So, you know, I can't tell you this is exactly that ratio you should do. Mm-mm. But I do know that it's just human nature to sometimes gravitate to easier relationships, easier visits, in whatever form that other person across the table takes. And it needs to be monitored because it can unintentionally or sometimes intentionally get out of whack to look productive, but maybe is not.
Yeah, and you identified the key.
So back to your point, I think what happens is you want to look for and agree with whoever, you know, your management team is to get on board with it. Obviously, if you're a consultant working with them and reviewing that is, hey, what is our feeling on how much our portfolios need to be growing and how much of our visits need to be happening with people we don't know yet, but feel we should, or know a little bit, but we need to know better versus, so that we get that number, either it's a projected number at the very beginning, or it's something you can look back at hindsight at the end of the year and break out to see how much activity is in that versus people you know, people you've already logged maybe 18 visits over the last 5 years with, but you're now logging 4 more visits. I would say, hey, your time is just as valuable, you know, to do new stuff. So I'm definitely not going to say stewardship visits are not valuable. But when you have a platform where you're stewarding them through your legacy society, hopefully they're being stewarded by the larger organization just as a donor for different elements of things they do. So there's those two broader ones. Hopefully they're building relationships to other people other than the gift planner, you know, the impact providers, staff, whatever the case may be. You're probably having at least one function, if not more functions, specifically for them to come out where you're going to see them. So then the question is, okay, now how many visits on top of that do you do a year with that person? And that's a really good question to ask. And I think the answer is going to be different based on different donors, based on different gift sizes. If you know the size of bequests for certain donors, and I'm a huge believer, this is a little bit not done too often, but I'm a huge believer in understanding some bequest donors really, 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 really love your charity and have made a massive commitment, and other donors really like your charity, happen to include you in their estate plan, and you're going to end up with $22,000 if you are able to quantify their gift, which many times we can. And there's a different value to spending time with those two different people, yet that's generally not broken out. Most people will just say, hey, I went on 2 visits. They were with 2 legacy donors. It was a good use of my time. I'm glad I didn't spend that farting around with advisors. You know, that's so it sounds good, but that may not be the actual best use of your time, which is to do multiple visits with that donor X versus donor Y.
Well, Lonnie, you bring up so many great points, and we could take a deep dive on so many of these ideas. I hope you'll come back and dig into some of these other points that we're touching on. Can we kind of wrap up and summarize some key takeaways for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. I would definitely say that you might fall into, it's more segments in this, but you might fall into one of 2 easy camps, which is number one, there's a really clear return on the investment with investment advisors for your bottom line and your brand and your future revenue generating possibilities. And you want to first identify if you fall in that camp or not, and don't misidentify that. I know that there are organizations that they do and then think they fall into camp 2, which we'll cover in a second. But really, really important that you truly understand how advisors play out, what strategies can work for them, and proceed down, let's say, that division 1 of yes, I can justify it. I'm going to spend my time and money and resources, and it's going to help my organization, which I'm charged with raising money for, and also building the brand and doing other things, because the ROI is not, it's obviously we one look for those gifts, but there's other ones as well that can be very helpful for the overall organization. Then if you're in the group 2, which is you've done your due diligence, you've thought about it, and you don't think that it's as easy or as clear of a straight line to a financial ROI for you. At that point, I'm encouraging you to still spend, you know, 99, 98% of your year on these things that you normally would do anyways, but to start to do some greater things for the greater good in this area, because you have the volume. The small amount of group one organizations are going to try to do the lion's share of the work. But when you add up all the group twos who individually don't think that they're going to make a difference, but you get your resources together, you all add in 1 or 2% of your time in this area, in your specific area, your region, you help train, educate, motivate advisors in whether it be email marketing from just your organization, whether it's hosting one event biannually. There's so many simple things you can do that are not going to blow up your overall time or your budget. Imagine those 50,000 charities that are doing nothing in this space now start doing a little bit. You will greatly improve indirectly a whole bunch of charities, just like you are benefiting now from the work of a few select really big charities doing the heavy lifting right now.
And may I add, test and measure, like everything else we do. Mm-hmm. Anything worth doing long term is worth testing short term. Try to figure out. One simple idea my buddy Brian Sagristano gave me years ago is very simple. If you have a professional advisors event or some type of outreach, send them a survey, follow-up survey. And one of the questions could be, in the last 12 months, have you spoken to any of your clients about our organization?
Love it.
Simple, simple thing, but just to try to get some feedback on whether anything's really happening.
I love it. And first of all, I love that that approach and that suggestion. And I didn't mention it during the talk, but just so our listeners can get a scale, in my opinion, mm-hmm. The percentage of professional advisors that are comfortable with charitable planning, have been a part of a team that executed charitable, especially charitable bequests, and then of course any kind of charitable structured gift, is still tiny. Mm-hmm. I mean, tiny. And we won't get into it. We'll maybe cover for a different one. But I speak all around the country. I have dealt with this a lot. And it's still a small fraction of advisors that comfortably and regularly do charitable planning work with their clients. And that means we're leaving a ton of very powerful, influential counselors out there in our community who are not experienced and don't start the conversations positively or with much depth, to be honest, in their planning. And there's many reasons why that is, and that's not a knock on them. This is just a niche area that many of them don't have a lot of experience or high volume of frequency to deal with. And that plays out and I think hurts our overall sector in a big way.
Let's talk about that next time.
Sounds good.
And so, Lonnie, thank you. Where can people find you? Is there anything you want to plug specifically?
My website is 50 Rock Consulting. If you want to see more about what I do and where I speak, and just come out and see me. I'm usually bouncing around regional and national conferences across the country. So if you want to learn more, I do speak to professional advisors on a regular basis doing CE credits for them. And then I do speak to nonprofits a lot on strategies for professional advisors.
And that's 50 spelled out, F-I-F-T-Y, Rock Consulting.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. Yeah.
And Lonnie's a great speaker, and you're a great podcast guest. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
And how do we say goodbye in Hawaiian? Is that how you?
Yeah, usually you can say, one, you can say goodbye, but two, you can say aloha and mahalo.
Mahalo. Great. Thank you so much, Lonnie.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.